Morning, everybody. My name is Elias Hamadan. I have the honor of introducing Keith Bauman to us this morning. As you know, Keith has spent most of his life in India and Nepal, part of that diaspora of psychedelic initiates back in the 60s and 70s who went to the East to find the wisdom of the East. But unlike most of us, he stayed there and learned Sanskrit and Tibetan, and thereupon wrote many books, a whole shelf full of books, and translated the great Dzogchen texts, studying with Tibetan lamas and so on. He's one of those rare breeds of scholars who is not only an accurate scholar, but a yogi himself, a Dzogchenpa. And that's obvious in all of his works that we've come across. Thousands of us in the West are indebted to him for bringing the realizations of Dzogchen to us, but in an idiom that is penetrating and accurate and somehow goes right to the heart of our own search. I think of him, maybe we often think of him as a kind of, he might wince when he hears this, as a modern day Varatsana, the great translator who first traveled to Oriyana and brought back the early precepts of Dzogchen to Tibet. I think of him also as a true heart son of the Dzogchen lineage. And one last thing I'd like to mention is that Keith is largely itinerant during these last few years. He travels all over the world, as you know, and teaching in dozens of locations like this. And making his offering of his writings, his teachings, his translations. And as you might imagine, it's not making him a wealthy man. So if there's any chance that you can afford to help him in this his itinerancy and teaching, to add to the fee of this workshop, it would be most appreciated. I wanted to put one last word here, a sentence from his introduction to this, to our text for the weekend. But in his inimitable style, we find this sentence. Here we are at the fag end of the Kali Yuga, with the apocalypse in sight. Human suffering at a millennial peak, greed and hatred rampant, overpopulation and climate change threatening annihilation of the species, and no recourse available as effective as Dzogchen. So I'm sure that over the course of this weekend we'll find the truth of that sentence. So perhaps rather than with an applause, shall we welcome Keith with a bow.
Thank you. So welcome to this Dzogchen mandala, everyone. Old minds and new minds. This introduction may have led you to believe that you there will be some product from this weekend. And I would like it to make it very clear that is not the point at all. If you take something away, that extra, then you have a burden that you've added some weight to your life, which is actually quite contrary to the point of Dzogchen, which aims at total lightness. There's already a certain heavy seriousness in this room. which is fine to begin with, but we should lighten the weight. The practice, if you like, of this weekend is cutting away. And I called the weekend a standalone Dzogchen. And I should develop that theme throughout the weekend, because I think it's very germane to this moment in Boulder, which is really like the hub of American Buddhism, isn't it?
Of course.
Or
totally.
Or at least it's one of the main centers. And that is the main point of us being here together. On the other hand, it's the moment of the Yeshe Lama, which I expect most of us here are familiar with it to some extent. And if you haven't, then you will be, I hope, by the end of tomorrow. It's the moment of the Yeshe Lama. Anyway, it's the point of my translation, of publication of my translation. It's been out for 4 or 5 months now. I will say right from the beginning that the Yeshe Lama is not our textbook. It's not our Bible. It's not a manual which we should take and follow literally, word for word, from the beginning to the end. That's not it. It has been crucial in the spiritual life of the Dzogchen, of the Nyingma in Tibet for the last 200 or 300 years. And for that reason, it is has a very high profile in the Nyingma arena. But I don't want to present it as the answer. I want to present it as material that can help us to focus on our own life, to give us a perspective on our life with Yeshe Lama inclusive, or that the essence of Dzogchen inclusive. But Jimmy Lingba undoubtedly was one of the great exponents of Dzogchen in Tibet ever. He is the heart son of Longchenpa. And these two names, Longchenpa and Jimmy Lingba, are on a separate level. So as Longchenpa, Jimmy Lingba was not simply a brilliant intellect. He was a mystic. He embodied what he taught, and what he spoke or what he wrote was just like flack, like the brilliance of the man's mind, giving what he could to the Nyingma lineages. So the book itself is vital, and it's worth all our attention. But it is not to be assimilated as it was in Tibet. brother, Jimmy Lingba, Jimmy Lingba's work, or Jimmy Lingba's life was characterized by the environment of that time, a very specific historical time and moment for the Nyingma school. Nothing to do with us. So what we have to do is distill the essence of that that material. So and that distillation, that the essence of the Nyingma, of the Yeshilama, that is radical Dzogchen, and that is what I consider really the essence of Tibetan Buddhism. That's the reason for the existence of Tibetan Buddhism, is to give us that radical Dzogchen now. And the rest is a very interesting anthropological material or aesthetic and intellectual, yes, but study for the academia. Also, it has many facets of interest, but that's just cultural stuff. However, after that, I'm saying that's the main point of this weekend. After that, I want to look at the actual practices that Jimmy Lingba considers to be the essential practices of Dzogchen. And the Yeshilama, the book is divided into parts. The first part is what you call basic training or preliminaries, mundro, and then the trekchur, and the tergal, and then the bardos, and the nimanakaya aspect. And these last two, I think, are subsidiary, and I want to concentrate on the practices of the mundra and trekchur and tergal, which it sounds like an impossible program for a couple of days, but I want to give you, a lot of you may have already had instruction in the Yeshilama in these practices in the Nyingma practices, and what I have to say can shine some light on that and give another angle on it, and in that way be beneficial. And for those who have not had those introductions, maybe they have some attraction. But before we get into that nuts and bolts, I want to pull the plug on any kind of attachment that you may have already developed and which may be developed by descriptions of it, of the practice. I want to pull the plug on the graduated path. I want to get rid of the notion that Tibetan Buddhism presents you with a ladder of spiritual progress from ignorance to wisdom, or from darkness to enlightenment, or from sentient being to Buddha. This very elementary and confusing notion has arrived before Tibetan Buddhism came to the West. It was introduced by the Sri Lankans and Thais, and by the Mahayana scholarship and so on. And no doubt it has some validity. It is the path of self-improvement that was developed in Asia over the millennium. And the notion of self-improvement is dangerous notion, and actually quite antithetical to radical Dzogchen. We need to get rid of the notion of self-improvement. Insofar as we devote ourselves to the relative quality of life, we miss the point of being itself. And maybe this is the great lesson of Tibetan Buddhism gives us, is that the pointing at back at that essential absolute and relegating the relative aspect of the quality of life to a very secondary position. And so that if we can get that sense of the absolute, the ultimate, the from Yeshe Lama, then I think Jingmi Lingpa, we will have fulfilled Jingmi Lingpa's promise. Insofar as we take the Yeshe Lama as a textbook of spiritual practice, which we devote ourselves to in a daily schedule, then we will be obscuring his primary purpose. And yes, I'm saying that Dzogchen is something different from Buddhism. Buddhism is about, the basic dogma of Buddhism in those little verses that are so common in the Hinayana context about being better people, maybe even serving others, a bodhisattva vow, and so on. It's not about that. Something else. Those qualities can be developed, and you go to Hinayana or the Mahayana schools in order to find the skillful means for that process. Dzogchen is saying, no, leave it alone. The only way that you can attain that bodhisattvic aspiration or that bodhisattvic aura and inspiration is by forgetting about it and focusing on the nature of mind out of which it arises. Identify with the nature of mind and you will have that entire Buddhist pantheon, all of those mandalas which are represented in these tankas will naturally, spontaneously arise according to the requirements of the moment. And in no way, no, never do we have to consider developing those mandalas or those particular qualities of mind. If they do not arise spontaneously out of the need of the moment, then they have. Then what are they? It's a monastic Buddhism. Which and let's consider the monasteries as kindergartens, for where the youth, where the children can get an education and a very good education if it's a Buddhist culture. But that's not our point. And lamas who come over from Asia and treat us like elementary school children who need to be versed in the alphabet of Asian cultures are really ignoring what we need here, which is integration. It's like return to the source. It's like worship of the nature of mind, worship of, well, where the heart spring of joy and of pleasure. So Dzogchen, right from the beginning, I mean from the preliminaries in the exposition according to the laddered concept, is all about identity with the nature of mind, recognition of the nature of mind. And yes, if you have actually understood, if you know the three precepts of Garab Dorji, and Garab Dorji was the first tulku of the lineage, an emanation of Dorji Sempa, the first human exponent of Dzogchen. And in his final testament, he gave these three precepts, which have become quite common in many, many translations and have been taught all over the West. That's the root, and there's nothing really much more than that to teach. And if you have actually assimilated those three precepts, or if you've assimilated the first of the three, then that's all you need. There's nothing else. And you can go home to bed. And Jigme Lingpa's Yeshe Lama, that's only for people who really haven't quite got the point. This is very important. We don't need the sophisticated practices if we understand and have the very simple first point, and that is recognition of the nature of mind. And all Dzogchen teaching is a pointing at that nature of mind. And more or less, it's successful. And insofar as we have assimilated that message, insofar as we have realized what that precept means, which includes the second and the third precepts, then what we are is enough. We don't need anything more. We don't need to spend our whole life in improving ourselves, because we are already there with an understanding of the nature of mind. So I called this weekend standalone Dzogchen. First of all, it's Dzogchen separate from Buddhism. More than that, let's say it's the non-dual discipline divorced from all of the relativities of religion. So in an understanding of that it's the non-dual path that is Dzogchen, we are freed from all kinds of dogmas. And that from right from the top to the bottom, it's all inclusive, that dogma is you know, whether it's the Sermon on the Mount or Heart Sutra, of course, all of the dogmas of religion are relegated to the library. When we understand that practice is actually the understanding of non-duality. And then we are also freed, we're freed from the dogma, we're also freed from the ritual. And yet that includes meditation, a ritual of meditation. The rituals of offering, the rituals of propitiations of the gods or of God, the worship of God, the praise of God, everything that you go to church for, everything that you go to the temple for, that has become redundant, or let's say secondary, because that ritual, non-dual ritual, that is oxymoronic. You can't do rituals which are activities designed to gain some benefit at the end. That's in the relative world. So we get rid of all dogma, get rid of all ritual, get rid of all support. The nature of mind is the wish-fulfilling gem. The nature of mind is the source of everything. That is the source of life and the source of energy, mental energy. Physical energy, the body mind is all emanating out of the nature of mind. That is the ground. That's the support. And of course, if you want to conceptualize it, the nature of mind, then it is the ground of being, which is the all suffusing power of the universe, present everywhere, in everything, past, present, and future, united. It's the ground, and that's the support. You have to turn the whole thing upside down. This physical stuff is not support. That is problem. The ground, the support, is the spaciousness of being, the spaciousness of reality, and that's the ground, and that's the support. Everything else, energetic forms and material forms, that they are all dependent upon that basic spaciousness, that they call it emptiness, if you like. So with that understanding, you get rid of the priest, you get rid of the guru. You get rid of the Kalyana Mitra, you get rid of the spiritual friends even. You get rid of all the social support. Because the only source of awareness, the only support of being is internal, and it's in the heart center, and it's in our heart center. And nothing else outside, and everything else is outside. All sentient life is outside. All energetic forms are outside. That is all product and irrelevant in the identification, the yoga of identification with the nature of mind. Just stand alone. It sounds like a little bit man as an island, but that's only in the moment before the identification is made. You start out with this psycho-organism as identified as the I, that's me, that's my identity. But immediately the notion of the heart center arises, you're identified with all human human life, and all sentient life, and all not just the life, but the material aspect of being. But the original notion is standalone. insofar as we go out looking for support, then we are precluding the identity with the nature of mind. Insofar as we look outside ourselves, insofar as we look beyond, insofar as we look into form, insofar as we evaluate, insofar as we value human emotion or human sentiment, we preclude an understanding of the nature of mind. Human emotion, as an aside here, human emotion and human sentiment are transformed into what is called compassion. But you don't get to compassion until you reject the attachment to those sentimental forms which come along with family, career, culture, society. So the one word which sums up that practice is non-action. That a technical word. And start out by applying that notion by rejecting energy put into self-improvement. Rejecting these tentacles which we all put out into the realms of possibility for self-betterment, for in Christian terminology, it's for virtue. In Buddhist terminology, for virtue. Or it's in maybe perhaps in Hindu terminology, it's yoga, and it starts out with asanas and pranayama and the disciplines that purify body, speech, and mind. Let that go. That's first, because that's all physical application. We don't want to be better people. And then meditation, or exercises, mental exercises that improve the quality of cognition or allows access to cities, relative cities, the powers of the mind. Insofar as we invest energy and time into developing those kind of powers, to that extent we ignore the ultimate city, which is again the nature of mind, realization of the nature of mind. Insofar as we value the relative, then the absolute perspective is lost. And I said something here before I lose you. We're going to get to the actual nuts and bolts of the Yeshe Lama, the nuts and bolts of Dzogchen praxis, you see. So we isn't that meditative exercise? Isn't that what the relative is? So work with that conundrum, with that paradox. Yes, perfect. Everything is perfect as it is. All kuntasampo. You can't get away from the assertion, from the basic understanding of every experience, momentary experience, as perfect and complete in itself. However, why are we here today? Why do we put time into out of our more important things like survival and reproduction, what in order to come here? Because we're broken, we're fragmented, we are in a dualistic quandary, and we're, something is not right. We're suffering. And so in that moment of recognition, of acknowledgement of the suffering, then we recognize the absolute. Then we must recognize that. That's the moment when this basic precept of Garab Dorji is relevant. And at that moment, most of us will go and do yoga or meditation or go to church or say a prayer or something like that. And yes, of course, this raises the quality of life a little bit and actually covers over the suffering or maybe transforms it a little bit. But that's not the point. The point is the nature of the suffering in itself, the nature of the quandary, the nature of this absurdity of this body and, what we have to do with it. So standalone Dzogchen is the requirement is the first precept of Garab Dorji, the recognition of the nature of mind, or rather the upswelling of the nature of mind into ordinary consciousness, and which is done by doing nothing. Insofar as we do anything, then that upsurge is precluded. And we can only do that if we've understood. We can only do that if we have had initiatory experience, or if we have understood that our moments of non-dual experience is the nature of being. The basic touchstone of existence, the soul truth of existence, if you like. And that means identifying that non-dual experience in our ordinary existence or in our extraordinary existence. You can't come to it, can't come to the first to Garab Dorji's first precept intellectually, or you can, but it doesn't do you any good. It has to be existential. It has to be experiential. You have to know that the nature of Kuntasampo. You have to know that the ground of being is that empty spaciousness and an awareness that suffuses all our activity, body, speech, and mind, and the existence of the entire universe, container, and the life within it. I mean, if you want to make the distinction, again, going back to the distinction between Dzogchen and Buddhism, Buddhism is an intellectual approach, it's a suppositional approach. I like that phrase. You are supposing that the ground of being is true and authentic, being. But you don't know yet. What we are assuming, everybody in this room, what we are absolutely certain, without any shred of doubt, that non-dual experience is our heart center, that is reality. And reality has no other definition than that. And we'll have come to that experience in various ways. Maybe even you come to it through the ritual of Vajrayana Buddhism. Maybe you come to it through dream, or childhood epiphany. Or maybe you come to it through drugs. Maybe you come through it through sex and through pleasure. Maybe you come to it through love. There are an infinite number of ways in which that experience can be realized. But that is the base, and that we have to recognize that. The ordinary materialistic mind, which is turned upside down, puts those experiences on the side like psychotic. Or at least there's a tendency there. I have to add a psychosis or schizophrenia as a doorway through which that experience of nature of my madness. You see, there's certain social norms which must be disregarded in order that identification can be made. Also, let's not forget simply sitting or treacherous meditation, in which the energetic movement of body-mind is calmed, pacified, until there is an intimation of what lies underneath all energetic oscillation. The problem there is that some people will think that is the skillful means by which the nature of mind can be realized mechanically, and if you sit enough, then you will get that intimation, which is not necessarily so, because the precept here or the understanding is that nothing that the intellect can do, there's nothing that the ego can do to undermine itself. The ego cannot undermine itself. So there's nothing that I can do to attain what transcends me. So what is required is a synchronicitous moment when things come together spontaneously and adventitiously, which is what occurs if you do nothing whatsoever, if you fulfill the requirement of non-action. That, incidentally, is where psychedelics can be very useful, although it's a complicated thing, because the psychedelics short-circuits the reluctance of the ego to undermine itself. The problem is that it's actually the ego that goes out to seek and to find the psychedelic and to put itself in the situation where that reaction can occur. So it's sort of tripping itself up. So standalone Dzogchen, you start out with the suffering of an Izzled ego. But then the mind is turned inward towards the heart center, and there it finds what engages the whole world as a system of interconnected functions, the pratityasamutpad, tendril, interrelatedness. So you start out with standalone Dzogchen, and you find yourself in an integrated field, Dzogchen, in the unitary field of Dzogchen, where there's no longer any distinctions, no longer distinctions between inside and outside, or between us and them, or between all sentient, any and all sentient life. It's all a single field, and there's no dimensions in it. It's a single dimension or zero dimension, and what you see is what you get, and what you get is the totality. So where does that leave us exactly? It's all very well, this that serenity of insight, but the thing is, when you get up from the seat and you go back outside into the street, into your ordinary life, then the same pressures are brought to bear, and you lose it. Or what do you lose? There's anger and jealousy and pride and desire, of course. And we can assimilate all of that. because it's all the nature of mind, and we can and be angry consciously, and we can make love fully with full awareness, and we can fight and go around emoting, as is our wont, and include that into the mandala. But there's a problem is there is a reduction in a freshness or sparkle. And when we're jaded, we find that actually our reactions, yes, we are conscious of what we are and what we do, but we find that it's like karmically conditioned all the time. And there's a sense of, a reduction in intensity. We know how things are, and nothing really surprises us. But there's not that, there's not the spontaneity there. So we're losing the center. We're getting lost in the periphery. Yes, we still have the connection, but it's attenuated. So that it's not. We're only going off at half cock. So how do we get back? How do we keep that freshness? How do we keep the energy at full blast? And this is where the Yeshe Lama comes in. Because what it presents really is reminders, and this is a key term, because it indicates that we know what's already there, we know how it is absolutely, but we need to keep the intellect free of its tightness and its reification. So now we're losing that initial Dzogchen standalone imperative certainty. So then we've got these exercises, if you like, the preliminaries and then the view and the meditation and conduct practice of treachery, and then we've got the final assimilation of sensory information as the nature of mind in the Turgal situation. It's totally useless if we bring the self-improvement approach to these exercises. It's just a waste of time. We must treat these exercises as reminders. They are simply illuminating what is already there. It's like pointing out that very crucial term which we use in treachery is actually apposite in every situation, but I say particularly in the preliminaries where maybe you're doing prostrations even, or let's leave prostrations out of it. You've been doing Rushen. The Rushen situation is merely a pointer back at the nature of mind. So that there is nothing that we are doing for a goal. We are doing it because it indicates the nature of mind in the here and now. And unless that insight is there, then the whole of the Yeshe Lama is a waste of time. What do we want? Do we want actually to create monasteries in America? We want to fill up America's empty spaces with monasteries where people are concerned with perfecting technical devices, but concerned with actually perfecting the skillful means, perfecting the exercise rather than fully enjoying the moment. And that is mistaking the wood for the trees. You make the path absolute. You make whereas the path is given, we all have, the path that we tread is given to us by karma, and they are the specifics of our experience. But starting with the shape of the body, or starting with the sex, the gender, and then the shape of the body and its physical qualities, and then the qualities, its energetic qualities, and its mental qualities, its cognitive qualities, that's all karmically determined, and that's our path. We don't want to add anything to that except it reminds us, it keeps us in the awareness of its true nature. But because that's the only purpose of it, it's only there. It's like a symbol of the absolute, and we must recognize the symbolic nature of our body, speech, and mind. And in that recognition, it becomes fully aware. That's the magic of symbol. So, but those Dzogchen exercises, first of all, they're all very short. They're not something which you can get fully involved in. In the Tergal practice itself, which is most specific, you don't really devote your life to turn your life into the Tergal yogi. It should be done in 21 days and finished, and you have the full effect of it, the symbol has been realized. Even if you give up, say, 21 days to a particular teacher or Tergal yoga, there's the danger of losing the here and nowness of your activity. It has to be totally integrated into your own karmic flow. If it's something outside, then it will remain something outside, and it won't affect the heart. And of course, you apply that principle to Vajrayana visualization and mantra practice of the realization of Buddha deities. It's so easy to have that practice on the side, which is something which you do morning and evening in a given schedule, and it never becomes an actual part of your own experience. The symbols of the deity in the visualization remain as symbols, that they are never opened, and the reality of the symbols doesn't become identified with your ordinary body-mind functions like perception and thought and feeling and consciousness. So the visualization of the symbol and the and its realization must be simultaneous. The deity must be realized right in the moment of its visualization. And what does that leave you with actually experientially in the process? The momentarily that identification with the reality of the symbol is realized. So you are never an I visualizing an it in space, up or down or wherever. There's never any duality there. Just a recognition of the nature of being, that's all it is. And even in the process of visualization and mantra, it's activity that you do on meditation seat, but it's still just a reminder of how things actually are. And if you're looking to the goal, if you're looking at a goal, if you're looking for a product, then you undermine the practice. It's just a waste of time. So the point I'm making here, doesn't matter what practice you're doing, whether it's Hinayana or Vajrayana or Dzogchen, the actual moment of practice has to be understood as the recognition of the nature of mind. So there is no point to it unless the discipline is totally integrated into your own being. Then there's no point to it. It has to be your own karma. I'm not saying that it's not your own karma or it's not my karma. It's certainly been part of my karma. But it must be understood as such. You can't prostitute this moment for the future, for some future advantage, even if it's sublime meditation that you're performing. It doesn't matter the quality of the prostitution. It's all totally worthless if it's done for some future advantage. And that's the principle that needs to be applied to exercises of the Ishilama. So that's my introduction. Maybe we should take a break and then we'll get to the nitty-gritty. Thank you.